Well, we thought it would be an amazing April Fool's joke if we did a show without any technical difficulties. Unfortunately, that plan went awry. Hi, Jeff Merrick.
Hey, how's it going, Wish? How's your day going?
Well, it sounds like you're on a cell phone, sir, instead of being on your
Yeah.
magic talkie box. Why is that?
Yeah. Wonder why that is. Remember Robo Merrick yesterday?
Last time on Merrick versus Wyszynski,
Yeah.
Jeff Merrick sounded like a cyborg.
Actually, if you can hear this in the background, you hear that noise? This is me actually completely dismantling my tie line box. You know
Whoa.
why? It's
Why?
finally gonna get looked at.
Oh, I love that. You know what?
I know.
I love when technology fails and then you can finally start to torture technology, like pulling the
Yeah.
legs off an ant. Whenever a machine of mine fails, I like to open it up and start pulling wires, hoping it can somehow feel pain.
Well, the thing about this one is it totally snuck up on it. Like we could it snuck up on us. We couldn't see this one coming at all. We had
Yeah.
no idea that this was ever going to be a problem. No indications for the past, I don't know, 3 years that this was ever going to be an issue. So it kind of snuck up on us, and we didn't know that there were problems, so we just didn't bother addressing them. It's just a goofy little podcast. Have some fun, whatever. Blow off the day. Yeah. How's your day been?
I know. Yeah, I mean, when the second half of our show is just you going exterminate, exterminate, it was
Pretty good.
really, I thought, perfect hockey talk. It was good times.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Let me tell you about my mishap today. So
What happened here?
if you happen to see me on NBC Sports Dash earlier today, you're one of 10 people who probably were watching. But also, you may have seen that I was not wearing my suit jacket as I normally wear on the shows. In fact, wearing a stately brown sweater with the typical Wyszynski shirt and tie. This is because this morning, I don't, I try to travel light, so I pack my suit jacket in a suitcase and then iron it. Wherever I get to where I'm going, be it New York, be it down the road somewhere else, I always pack my suit jacket and then iron it.
Right.
And this time I actually didn't. This time I actually wore it on the train, but I used it as a pillow, so it was still all wrinkly and stuff. So it was a mess. So I tried to rectify that this morning in preparation for television today by taking out ye olde iron and getting the wrinklies out of the jacket. Unbeknownst to me. The iron had been set at the highest setting for heat.
Oh, nice.
So when I applied iron to jacket, it burned. It burned. Oh, did it? It was like watching the alien's acid drip through the Nostromo in the original Alien. Like that's how quickly the hole in the jacket burned through. And it's the jacket's done. It's just done. And then of course because. It's insult to injury. I spend the rest of the morning scraping the bits of my jacket off the bottom of the iron to somehow salvage the iron that I have now soiled as well. So it was. This is twice today that I pulled an April Fool's prank on myself. That and then when I got to the Yahoo offices in New York today, they had bagels, and that's very exciting as a kid who grew up in New Jersey. So I took half a bagel, and I took the cream cheese, and I slathered the cream cheese on, and the cream cheese turned out to be whipped butter. So then you have that moment where you're like, okay, this isn't what I thought it was, but I put it on rather liberally. I've applied it to this bagel, so I just ate it, and now I feel disgusting. Now I feel like I drank an oil slick is how my stomach feels right now with all of the churned butter inside of it. But how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I feel like you. I should just go back to bed and call it a day. Crawl under the covers with a bottle of scotch and just say, April 1st, you got me. I'm resigning as general manager of this day. I want nothing to do with this. I got to go in later on doing the San Jose Sharks Edmonton Oilers game later on this evening. Hopefully nothing will happen on my drive in, but given the day that I've had so far, and given the day that you've had so far, and the bad luck on this podcast, I'm not so sure that it's safe to drive in by myself. I think I may need a caddy today. You know, there are just some days in your life where you feel you need a caddy. There's someone to take care of stuff for you instead of wandering
Yeah,
around
exactly.
beside you and just handle
You need a
everything. That's one of those days.
You need a personal butler. Yeah, you need Alfred the butler to help
I
you.
do.
To
I
help you
do.
somehow through life. Yeah, exactly. We've got a few things to discuss on the top of the show, though. Renaud, how do you say his name?
Renaud Lavoie. Okay, yeah.
Renoir.
I was going to have to do the intro too because it's French.
Renaud Lavoie.
Renaud Lavoie.
Renaud Lavoie.
Lavoie.
of TVA Sports
is
coming up.
You can say TVA Sports, but it's properly pronounced TVA.
Renault.
Just say TVA Sports.
Well, he's coming on to talk about the Canadiens and the Lightning later tonight, and he'll be our big guest today. Merrick's in for the intro, and then we'll probably cut the show short because it's, you know, undoubtedly something will go wrong. A few things to talk about first off with Mr. Merrick while he's on the line. You,
hello,
sir, wanted to address the conundrum that is the Ottawa Senators.
You know, it's an interesting conundrum, too, because as much as the Maple Leafs have become battlegrounds for fancy stats, and the weekend was a sweet, sweet vindication of all of those that said, we saw this coming, and this is where this thing was trending, not necessarily the eight-game losing streak, because I don't think there's anything predictive in Corsi, Fenwick, PDO, or whatever, that can predict an eight-game losing streak. But over the course of a season, there are trends that lead you to believe that this is not as good a team as some make out. The other interesting case right now is the other team in the province of Ontario, and that's the Ottawa Senators. I did the Ottawa game last night with Billy Jaffe, and couldn't help but marvel at a couple of different things. One, I know it's a one-game sample, but, man, Mika Zibanejad and Alex Hemsky were special together. And it seems more and more apparent that, yes, Alex Hemsky will probably re-sign with the Ottawa Senators. And that's what's, in a lot of ways, which really frustrating about Alex Hemsky, because when he wants to turn it on, they're just one of those guys, right? When they want to turn it on and they really want to play, sometimes just for contracts, they really give you a glimpse of the player they can be. And Alex Hemsky was not that guy for the Ottawa Senators, or for the Edmonton Oilers, but he has become that guy more than a point a game for the Ottawa Senators. He was fantastic yesterday with Alex Hemsky. He said he's already loved, what was his quote on the weekend? Jason Spezza's the best centerman I've ever played with. How dare you impugn the good reputation of Sean Horkoff and Marty Riesner, Alex Hemsky? How dare you do that?
But hold on. Didn't you answer your own question, though? Like, isn't this still essentially him singing for his supper, and we shouldn't be charmed by the offensive output that he's had in Ottawa?
You know what I can't help thinking, Wish? It's Alex Kovalev. It's Alex Kovalev.
Yeah, exactly. it's Alex Kovalev. You're completely right.
It's Alex Kovalev is what you're seeing right now. And the second line is fantastic. With Kyle Turris, NHL's first star of the week, Clark MacArthur, who going into last night's game at 12 points in two games combined. Mark Stone settles in on that right side. Not the best skater in the world, but then again, neither is Bobby Ryan. And he's injured right now, and that second line is really turning for the Sens right now. If you look at and break down, just mentioning, analytics a couple of seconds ago, and Tyler Dello wrote a really good piece on this in the Ottawa Citizen, and sort of isolated where the one area where Ottawa is the weakest, and it probably cost themselves games over the course of the season. As far as being a Corsi team, they're pretty good. You know, as far as generating opportunities and keeping opportunities against them at a pretty low level. The one difference between the Ottawa Senators, the team that made the playoffs, and this team that doesn't, is they're 30th in shot blocking. And shot blocking right now has become such, I guess, necessary evil when you consider, the ramifications of players getting, their ankles shattered, kneecaps blown out, and various, bumps and bruises along the way from jumping in front of pucks. You do have to wonder, when there's a team that, percentage-wise, is generating more towards the opposition's nets than they're allowing, you wonder if something as simple as, shot blocking going from, 24 blocks a game to 20 may be the difference between playoffs and non-playoffs for the Ottawa Senators.
Indeed. And right now, the Ottawa Senators situation right now, for those that don't know, I mean, the Senators are in back of playoff team in waiting, New Jersey. They've got 78 points, the Devils 79, Detroit with 84, Columbus 82, Washington 81, and then Toronto with 80. And there are some games in hand here and there. Columbus is obviously in good shape. 8 games left, 82 points. They've got a game in hand on everyone and 2 games in hand on Toronto. So we'll see. The games tonight are going to be extraordinarily interesting because Columbus hosts the Avalanche, the Capitals host the Dallas Stars, and Toronto tries to get healthy against Brian Burke and the Calgary Flames, all those games at home. So we're going to learn a lot. Oh, and also the Devils are in Buffalo. We'll learn a lot there. Thing I wanted to mention to you while you were still on the line here, Gustav Nyquist. Okay, so he's the second star of the week for the NHL.
Yeah.
27 goals in 50 games. He's averaging a goal every 2 games, or over that, actually. He's averaging 0.90 points per game. He has had as much an impact on his team as anyone in this league has I think you smell what I'm cooking.
Oh boy, here
what
we go.
Kind of heart? What kind of heart trophy, you know, support would Gustav Nyquist have right now? Where would you put him right now? Top 10? Top 5? Because the Red Wings are cooked if it's not for what he's done without Datsyuk and Zetterberg in the lineup. And if we're going to reward a guy like Babcock, like I have, for his coaching prowess in the face of adversity, this team's not scoring goals if it ain't Gustav Nyquist scoring them. So where does he fit right now within the context of a Hart Trophy race?
It's a great question because, you know, what's the body of work? 50 games, and it wasn't exactly as if it's a great start at all. So here's the question and I asked this last year about Sidney Crosby, and it's the same question I'll ask about Gustav Nyquist. And yes, down the stretch, you know, heavy hockey, big games, all the pressure, all the importance, and this guy's filling the net, sometimes in highlight reel fashion. That goal against Tampa was ridiculous. That was, and he's got a defenseman draped over his back, shades off to the side, and at an impossible angle puts it past Ben Bishop. It's a goal for the ages. But here's my question: if he scores all the, let's not take into account when these goals are being scored, namely as the Detroit Red Wings make their push for the playoffs. If these goals are all scored in the first half of the season, and then he's tailing off towards the end, but still, right now, after 50 games, he has 27 goals. Is he in the conversation at all? Do you just look at that trend as far as the push for the playoffs go, or do you say, well, you need to see the body of work over the entire season? Because I maintain that if Sidney Crosby last year had his injury at the beginning of the season and then, you know, came in, let's say it was like mid-November or something like that, and then went on that tear, you know, chasing and, you know, trying to win the scoring title, even though he, you know, would fall short a few points, I think watching that chase at the end may be enough to sway voters in order to give Sidney Crosby some Hart Trophy love. Meanwhile, because he had the injury at the end of the season, even though the points were exactly the same, there wasn't a whole lot of love for Sidney Crosby.
I think it's one of these situations where if it's a goaltender who plays 50 games, a la Jose Theodore that one year, and then has the season that Nyquist has had, right? Then it'd be a different situation. I mean, I feel like we are okay with goalies coming up and doing what they do. Like we talked about the other day, the Sean Burke thing with the Devils, the fact that Sean Burke got heart love in 1988 for the Devils for coming up and playing 13 games or whatever the hell it was. Like goalies are always the ones that get love for that. Mason's another one who, you know, came up and did what he did, with the Blue Jackets that one year. So we're always rewarding goalies for these short sprint kind of seasons. And I wonder whether or not you could do the same for Nyquist. I mean, listen, I know you want to discount, you know, when goals are scored, and I agree with you in spirit. Like, a goal in October is just as important as a goal in April, in theory, except for the fact that without Zetterberg and without Datsyuk and with Detroit in the fight of its life to try to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, this guy scored 11 goals in 9 games in March.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I there's a case to be made for him, and I don't quite know how to make. You know what I mean? Like, it's clear Crosby's going to win, and I think it's clear that Getzlaf's going to be in the second spot for the top 3. I don't know who number 3 is right now because I think Kessel has cooled off as far as his candidacy goes. I think that Sagan's always going to share support with Ben. I don't know who your third guy is right now, to be honest with you, and I wonder if there's a chance for Nyquist to sneak up in there if he winds up with, like, 35 goals.
Well, who's the agent? It's the first question you should ask.
Right.
And if I'm that gentleman, I'm starting that PR campaign right now and starting to lobby everybody with some well-placed emails with some very exquisite documentation of what Gustav Nyquist has been able to do for the Detroit Red Wings. I think he will get some consideration. I don't think it's anywhere near the top, but there will be a couple of people, I think, that put his name on the ballot just for what he's done right now. And I think maybe even the bigger story out of all of this is, you remember why he couldn't make the team at the beginning of the season?
What was the story there?
Salary cap.
No.
He didn't have the room.
Yeah.
He didn't have the room for Gustav Nyquist. I was told 2 years ago that Mike Babcock was so high on this guy that he was going to be, you know, the next big star with the Detroit Red Wings, and he's going to be a future standout player with the Detroit. He was the one guy in the Detroit Red Wings organization in GR 25th of May Day that day, and we're talking to someone in Detroit, and they said Nyquist. Nyquist is a guy that Babcock absolutely loves, and it's almost like he's going to make him his little special project, and he's going to give him every single opportunity. And the big opportunity, I guess, was number 40 and number 13 going down. Yeah. And if you saw him play with Thomas Tatar in Grand Rapids, you know how, you know, at times it was almost as if those two were playing puck on a string. I mean, they made some defensemen and some goaltenders look really bad in the American League over the past couple of seasons. So I'm kind of shocked that he's had the impact that he's had now, but it just goes to show you nobody is poorly served by spending extra time in the American Hockey League.
Yeah, little season.
Like I always say about, you know, it's never a bad thing to send a kid back one extra year to junior. It's also never, and Detroit proves this going away, it's never a bad thing to over-ripen your players in the minor leagues. Because I don't know one player that's ever been hurt by it.
All you Mikhail Grigorenko kids out there, listen up.
Well, he was false start at the beginning. He should have played all those games.
Yeah, exactly. That was asinine. But dude, looking at it, I mean, it's Crosby and Getzlaff as your two locks for the heart. I'm guessing the third guy right now would be Giroux, who's going to have that Ovechkin love of playing like absolute dog shit for about, you know, 20 games and then turning it on and leading his team to the playoffs. So I imagine the top three will be the top three in scoring right now, Crosby, Getzlaff, Giroux. But boy, oh boy, I mean, that Nyquist thing is interesting. I you could make a case for him, you know, looking at his impact, looking at where the Wings would be without him. It's the quintessential Hart Trophy argument, which is the Wings would be dead in the water without this guy scoring 27 goals in 50 games. I mean, they would be dead.
Jimmy Howard's been pretty good, too.
Ah, Howard Schmoward. We're talking about Nyquist here. Come on.
All right. I mean, let's not forget, too. I mean, the goaltender's kind of been all right.
All right, before we get to Renaud Lavoie.
Pretty good. Well,
thank you. Before we get to him, question is to you, sir, because our question of the day is, give us your favorite hockey prank. It's April Fool's Day. Merrick and I were kicking some ideas around. We couldn't really come up with anything that was worth doing. So give us your favorite hockey prank. And I wanted to ask you, sir, as a fountain of information, as a guy who probably has 25 stories at the ready about hockey pranks, is there any one that you'd like to share with the listeners before you head off into the
sunset? There are many that I can't share. But one of my favorite ones, too, is I think I just mentioned May Day a second ago, one that Brad May told us on the podcast, I want to say 2 years ago, when he was playing in Vancouver with Matt Cook. And he wore the ugliest Christmas sweater anyone had ever seen, so the guys took it, put his number on the back, and then had the rink manager raise it to the rafters at the rink. And out in practice, all the guys started cracking up and looked up at the ceiling. And they told Cookie, that's the only time you're going to get your jersey retired and lifted to the rafters anywhere. Get his Christmas sweater with his number on it.
Yeah.
But the worst part about it was, Matt Cook got legitimately hot about it. Like, he was legitimately pissed about it. And, that's such a bad thing to do when you're part of a team, brought a lock the next day and locked up all of his stuff.
Right.
So no one would go near it. Oh, that's tough.
That May Day episode still gets referenced to me, by the way. The stories that he spun were just amazing that day. Yeah, for sure. All right, so we're going to give a lot of love to the listeners later on in the show. Your favorite hockey pranks, your favorite hockey tricks, including ones that are a bit more satirical than the ones that have actually happened. The game you're most looking forward to tonight, by the way, before we let you go.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of them. I mean, the one that you're going to talk to Renaud about is a good one, because that's a playoff preview right there. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of those, hey, we'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. Here's the receipt we'd like to leave you with. I love the Dallas chase. I love the Washington chase. So Dallas and Washington is one that holds a little bit of love for me there, too. And listen, man, New Jersey and Buffalo. Can New Jersey
don't even start. Stop it. Stop it right now.
Can New Jersey do this, Wish? And then there's the obvious one, the Tortorella Vigneault Bowl tonight with the Rangers and the Vancouver Canucks in D.C.
Well, here again is the reason why, as much as I want to count the Devils out, I can't. Because of the remaining games they have 7 left. There is one against the playoff team, and that is Boston at the end of the season, and that will be against the Providence Bruins. So
probably.
The schedule's there. I mean, it's all there for them to run the table if they wanted to, if they could. And we wouldn't even be having this discussion if they could win a goddamn shootout. But
it would be awesome too if you could call up the minor league coach and just give the head coach a rest as well. Like Claude Julien's not behind the bench. It's Bruce Cassidy, the head coach of the Providence Bruins, because they're gonna rest the coach as well in the last game.
Bruce Cassidy, wow.
Come on, buddy. Yeah, he's done great for Providence.
Hey, just out of curiosity, I don't know if this is a question for Maddie or not. I mean, Renaud's there. Can we have everybody on the phone at the same time, or do you have to get off the phone for us to hear Renaud, I wonder? I don't know. What do you think, Merrick? We could do all everybody? Hey, you want to stay on?
Sure, what the hell?
Yay! Joining us now on the line, he's the man about the Habs on TVA Sports. He's Renaud Lavoie, and he joins me and Jeff Merrick here on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good, and you guys?
We're doing good. Jeff Merrick is on his phone, so his audio quality may be a little rougher than mine. Also, I have a better voice for radio than him, so he's already at a disadvantage. I will begin the conversation, sir. Habs and Lightning tonight. I want to know, first off, we all know that Montreal will be the pride and joy, the apple of Canada's eye in this postseason.
Yeah.
Probably the only Canadian team to make the cut, barring a Leafs miracle. Tell me why there's a chance Montreal can win the Stanley Cup.
Because it's the first time that that team's got that much depth. I believe that when you look at their fourth line, that they're not going to play tonight, but because those players are still injured. But you look at Dale Weiss, Brendan Trost, Travis Mullen. Those three guys are not in the Montreal Canadiens lineup right now. And you cannot imagine how important they are for that team. And that's why the Canadiens, I think, have a chance to go far this season. The goal is to have those three guys back to start the playoffs or sometime during the playoffs. It's going to be versus Tampa Bay, so that's why tonight's game is important. But, you know, you look at those four lines, you look at Thomas Vanek, what he brings to the table night after night. You look at how he plays with David Desharnais and Max Pacioretty. I mean, those three guys, it's one, I think, of the best line in the NHL right now as we speak. They're really dangerous. And if you're not careful with those guys on the ice, you'll get caught. And that's why I think the Canadiens are going to be hot, and they have Carey Price.
Jeff Nackisi, salutations from my little cell phone here in Stouffville. Quick question for you, mon ami. Avec Thomas Plekanec, we always talk about underrated players in the NHL. Yep. And for some reason, maybe this speaks to the fact that he is legitimately underrated across the National Hockey League. Where do you put Thomas Plekanec in the conversation for most underrated player in the NHL? It seems as if every year you can just pencil him in for his points, pencil him in for his goals, but nobody talks about him.
Yeah, and you know what? We had today a conversation, Louis-Jean and I. Louis-Jean's working with me at TVA Sports, as you know. Yep. And the conversation was about the possibility that we'll have a Lightning versus Montreal playoff series. It's going to be the first time since 2004, so it's 10 years ago. You look at the Lightning, won the Stanley Cup that year. And you look at the Canadiens today, there's only two players left from on those two teams, and it's Andrei Markov and it's Thomas Plekanec. And it says a lot. Those players were there in 2004, and they're still with the Canadiens today. You can't understand Markov because there's not a lot of offensive defensemen like him. But it's tough to understand that a guy like Thomas Plekanec is still with the team, even if the team was struggling for a lot of those years after. But you know what? He was not struggling. And he was still the best player on that team. And if it's Jacques Martin who coached him, Guy Carbonneau, you can go with Michel Therrien right now, Randy Cunningworth, whoever you want to put as the head coach of the Canadiens during the last 10 years, they're only talking about one player that you don't have to coach. And it's Thomas Plekanec. You don't have to say a word to Thomas Plekanec. You don't have to tell him, hey, buddy, you need to play better tonight. You need to be ready. He's always ready. Always the first player on the ice at a morning skate or even like yesterday or normal practice. Always the first one on the ice. Show example. So he's no Sidney Crosby. Doesn't have the skill as a Sidney Crosby. But he's got the work ethic. and he's playing really well defensively. So that's why coaches love him in Montreal, and that's why 10 years after the last time the Lightning and the Canes played each other in the playoffs, well, you know what? Andrei Markov is still here, but don't forget Thomas Plekanec. He's a valuable player.
And the man can rock a turtleneck. Mm-hmm. I wanted you to tell me about Michel Therrien, because I feel like Therrien is a guy who's very divisive amongst Habs fans. I've talked to some that are convinced the team is winning despite his decisions this year. I once referenced him as a Jack Adams potential candidate and was basically laughed off the internet for it. Do you have a bit more respect for the job he's done this year, or is it one of these situations where it's Carey Price, it's the players around him that are carrying this team and not necessarily anything Therrien has done?
You know what? I believe in chemistry in hockey, but it needs to start with the coaches too. It needs to be, when you look at a team, it needs to be the players and the coaches. In this era, I think that's the way it works. And you look at the Maple Leafs right now, is it exactly what's going on in Toronto? The players are in this, same level as the coaches, and everybody thinks the same. I'm not sure. When I look from the outside, obviously I don't see it. But when you look at the Boston Bruins, look at the Boston Bruins with Claude Julien, Peter Chiarelli. What a hell of a job they're doing together. But you know what? Everybody's on the same boat. They treat the players the way they're supposed to be treated, and that's exactly what Michel Therrien is doing right now with this group. Maybe it wasn't the case to start the season. Maybe Michel had a lot to prove to the players, but he took some really hard decision. Think about it. Marc Bergevin, one of his best friends, is Pat Brisson. Pat Brisson's client was, and he still is, Daniel Brière. What happened to Daniel? Mm-hmm. He was put in the stands. What happened to David Desharnais, who's still a client of Pat Brisson, in the stands? And I think Mark worked really well with Michel. Both guys had a plan. They stick together. And the players now believe more in what the management is doing, and it shows on the ice. And think about it. A month and a half ago, or maybe 4 weeks ago, Michel Therrien arrived and asked the captain and Josh Georges to come in his office. And they were planning the actual trip. What are we going to do? How many days are we going to stay in Florida? Are we leaving after the game in Tampa to go to Ottawa? Or are we staying in Tampa for another day and maybe play golf? So they're going to play golf tomorrow. What do you think about it? So look at the way Michel is working with the players. Look at the way the players are responding to Michel's decisions. And you know what? I see chemistry. I see a lot of I see a lot of trust. And when you see trust and you feel like everybody's on the same page, I think you have the result that it shows when you look at all those good teams, the Boston Bruins, the Blackhawks, even this year the St. Louis Blues. Everybody's on the same page. And that's why those teams are having success.
Now, curious about one person, and it's not a player, the other end of the rink in another organization this evening on the Tampa Bay Lightning, the assistant general manager. He used to be the capologist for Bob Gainey with the Canadiens, and that's Julien Brisebois. And we talk about, the next great young general manager in the game, and Botterill's name gets mentioned quite liberally. Fenton's name comes up as well. What do you think the future holds for Julien Brisebois?
I just can't believe he's not a GM right now in the NHL as we speak. I mean, what else can you do? He's the one who hired Coach Cooper, who was, by the way, coaching in Green Bay in the USHL.
Right.
And he was able to find a way to he was looking for a special coach, a guy who's working well with the players. And he hired him, obviously, as his head coach in the AHL. And look at what he's doing right now with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, Julien, talk to Steve Yzerman about Julien Brisebois, and he's going to say tons of good things about Julien. But Steve Yzerman, and totally understandable, doesn't want to see Julien go. But at one day it's going to happen. For sure it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I think Julien should be I don't know if his phone is ringing but you know, to be honest with you, I understand that there's some really valuable people right now in the NHL. Look at Tim Murray, one of the good guys in Ottawa. He did a hell of a job. He deserved to be the GM of the Buffalo Sabres. But I just hope that guys like Tim and Julien, obviously now is the next one that I see going for a new job, a position that is going to open at one day somewhere. But you need to look at him. You really need to look at him. And he's so bright, and he's not afraid of anything, and he's got his own plan, and he's going to make you win.
Last one for me, sir, and thanks for joining us today. Can this team beat the Boston Bruins? That is the collision course we all expect to see in the semifinals. I'm sorry. I'm going to check that. The divisional finals, as the NHL is calling them. Can this team beat the Bruins in a seven-game series?
Hell of a question, huh? And look at the way the Canes played this year versus the Boston Bruins. If I'm a Boston Bruins fan, what I like to see is the way they played versus Montreal last month. I think they won a game 4-1, and there was no incidents on the ice. The Bruins were there to play hockey, and they were there not to, throw punches or be upset with something that Emma Lytton did on the ice. I mean, if the Bruins understand that they just need to focus on hockey versus the Canadiens, they have a great chance to win. But if and I love Milan Lucic, but if you see that the Bruins players are frustrated with the way P.K. Subban is working on the ice or talking on the ice, or a guy like Emelin likes to hit with players maybe having their head down. I call it dirty hip if you want, but I don't care. They're still going to do it because you know what? They know that it works versus the Bruins. And I see discipline in the Bruins game in the playoffs versus Montreal. They have to. If they do that, Boston's going to win that series. But if there's no discipline in their play, you know what? Montreal's going to win that series. There's no doubt in my mind.
It's been some great one-goal games between those two teams. Last one here, and like Greg said, Renaud, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Anytime.
It's greatly appreciated. Okay, price tag time. When all is said and done, where is the decimal point on P.K. Subban?
Well, you mean contract-wise?
Wait.
Great question. The question that you need to ask yourself is, can you be as successful without P.K. Subban? The answer is no. There's not a lot of defensemen like that in the NHL. If you look at what P.K. wanted to have his big contract two seasons ago, and not, if he would have signed a six-year deal like Carey Price did, we wouldn't talk about contracts right now, and maybe our discussion would be this one. He's underpaid compared to other defensemen in the league. That didn't happen. So today he's there sitting, and his agent, Don Meehan, I feel, got all the power in the world. The bottom line is, he's a great defenseman. He's a hell of a player, and he wants to win. He's got already two gold medals, one with Team Canada Junior, one with Team Canada at the Olympics. He won a Norris Trophy, best defenseman in the league. He's only 24 years old. I mean, what else can you ask? And what he really wants, and that's why he's playing the game, is to win a Stanley Cup. And you know what? He's going to win a Stanley Cup. So you better have that player on your team. You better have that player on your team. What is it going to be? Is it going to be a 8-year contract at $8 million per season AAV? Possible. Ooh. Is it going to be higher than that? I wouldn't be surprised. The cap's going to go way higher. But the reality is, P.K. Subban's got all the power in the world right now, and that power was given to him. So that's the reality. And after that, I know Marc Bergevin is a great GM. They're going to find a way to make that deal happen. But I don't see P.K. Subban playing elsewhere. And I see P.K. Subban finishing his career even with the Montreal Canadiens. He really loves to play here. And that marriage needs to work. That's it. That's all. I mean, we can discuss for long, long minutes about how it's going to cost and what it's going to take at the end of the day. But at the end of the day, P.K. Subban wants to play for the Montreal Canadiens, win a Stanley Cup in Montreal, and not only one, if it could go to two or three, good for him and for the team. And I'm pretty sure that the management, they want to find a way to keep him here for a long, long time.
Great stuff, Renaud. Hey, thank you, man. We'll talk to you again down the line, maybe as the Habs advance and, of course,
the Bruins. Oh, it's going to be a great spring after an awful winter weather.
All right, man. Take care. Thanks for joining us.
Merci. Merci.
Yes. Soufflé, vase, whatever.
I teach you French one of these days. I mean, I think I've told this story before. I always try. Because, I mean, at one point in my life, I was actually bilingual, right? Mm-hmm. And I always try whenever I go to Montreal, and whenever I get off the plane, I always say to myself the one thing, I want to see how far my French will take me. Mm-hmm. I want to see how far along in Montreal I can get just using my French. And you know where it ends?
Where?
In the cab. Because I always speak to the cab driver in French, and he always responds in English.
And then there it is. As always. Hockey Band Names writes in, please, Subban is overrated. He played one game in the Olympics, and his Norris Trophy is bullshit. Your response, sir?
Well, I mean, yeah, he didn't directly contribute to the gold medal, but he was on the team. He did play the one game. Was it the game against Austria that he did play? But he was selected to be on that squad. So, you know, is it as... You know, is it the same as the Jonathan Toews gold medal or the Carey Price gold medal? Probably not, but he still does have a gold medal. And as far as the 48-game season goes, you know, he didn't even play the full 48 because of the contract situation.
Right.
It's half a season to give him half a Norris. Did the Devils get, half a cup for winning the Stanley Cup?
According to Rangers fans, for a very long time, we had half a cup. So
Indeed. So the season was what the season was, and so for that, I will not discount the Norris Trophy for P.K. Subban.
Couple things before we get to pranks. Want to give you an update on that beer hug hockey fight. Remember the one in the Federal Hockey League?
Yeah.
There was there were two guys that squared off at center ice. Instead of throwing a punch, they hugged, and then Matt Puntureri, pulled a can of beer out of his pants, drank it, gave a peace sign to the crowd, and they skated off arm in arm. Him and Jesse Felton are friends going back a few years. This was a stunt that was set up a week beforehand. A few of the players on the Danville Dashers, that's where Puntureri plays, knew about the beer beforehand. His coaches did not. The league did not, obviously. So what happened with these two gentlemen? They have been both suspended indefinitely. Felton will be suspended for the duration of the Federal Hockey League playoffs, such as you can have playoffs with four teams in the league. And Puntureri is a guy who now is telling people he has heard, quote-unquote, through the grapevine, that he will be banned for life from the Federal Hockey League for the beer stunt, as their commissioner told me, Jeff Barrick. Obviously, the biggest problem was bringing alcohol on the ice. If they had just hugged each other at the end of the season, bringing beer on the ice is what we're upset about.
Yeah, I can kind of see that being a line. I understand that. I don't know that I like a lifetime suspension for it. A little, you know, rap on the knuckles, maybe rest of the season, don't do that again. I don't think there's going to be an epidemic of people bringing beer on the ice. I really don't for a second. I would sooner just treat this as a goofy one-off that it was. Guys, hang on a second here. This is the Federal League.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Federal League. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, so exactly. These guys all have like Monday to Friday daytime jobs too, right?
Right.
This isn't like I'm going to the NHL. I'm going to play first unit power play with the Boston Bruins.
I talked to the commissioner and there's one thing that he said that made sense, which is that when the goal of your league is trying to attract investors, trying to attract new owners, new teams, and also advance players up the ranks to other minor pro leagues, this is the kind of thing that all of a sudden paints your league in a certain light. You know,
I don't think so.
I kind of see what he's talking about here. You know, the Federal League is now a four-team league where the most famous thing that ever happened was a guy hit a beer in his pants and drank it during a staged fight. This is the problem right now.
Two of the teams have the same owner.
Yeah, and one of the teams folded and then was reconstituted and pulled players from other beer leagues. Listen, the league has got its own reputation problems. I don't think this helps, but I agree with you that I think banning a guy for life for this thing is stupid. And by the way, Panettiere is the guy who's kind of pushing this through, is saying he might be banned for life. He's also a guy who's not coming back to the league. He's already told the National Post that he's thinking about playing in Europe next year anyway. So it's not as if this is going to be a devastating blow to him. I think he was already playing in the Southern Professional Hockey League this season when he signed with the Federal Hockey League. So it's not as if this guy doesn't have options. So banned for life is like, it'd be like if you were banned for life from a Hardee's. You know, you still have McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's and Taco Bell and White Castle to suffice, even if you can't get back to a Hardee's.
I'll tell you what, I would much rather go to a hockey game and see a hockey player pull a beer out of his pants and have a drink than watch scantily clad girls dressed up as Hooters waitresses bend over in front of goaltenders to sweep the snow any day of the week. Somehow that gets a free pass.
Look at
That's
you.
Not destroying
Hi.
The credibility of the integrity of the sport.
That
but
sounds
you heard. Hugging a beer would come out.
That sound you heard was our sizable female listenership high-fiving each other, putting pictures
right,
of Jeff
is,
Merrick on the wall and praying to that idol for that stand he just took. The question of the day is, what are your favorite hockey tricks? What are your favorite hockey pranks? One that we have gotten a few times, and I agree, it's a classic from Nick Davis. Clear sock tape on blades and watching them take the ice for warm-ups and falling all over the place. That is a just a classic hockey prank.
That's a good one. The other one, it's so bad. And, remember, I was telling you some Bill LaForge stories on the podcast a couple weeks ago. Another one that the late Bill LaForge would do is you'd get the trainer to take, you know, the shavings you get when you sharpen a blade and sprinkle them on the floor, on the matted floor, on the opposition team's bench.
Nice.
So you're just taking out edges. You're just completely wiping out edges of the guy's skates.
Colin, aka Skinny Fish, writes in, I'm a big fan of the solo rookie lap for their first game. Felix Potvin, that's our other friend, and I saw Tim Stapleton's at the New York Islanders years ago. I very much am a fan of that. Also, Stephen Chorcher wrote that one as well. Our good friend Jean Chantantilly writes in, the Toronto Maple Leafs would be the best hockey prank. constantly pranking us about the advanced stats and their effectiveness, constantly pranking us about what a playoff team should look like. Matt L. writes in that Phil Esposito has been impersonating Greg Wyshynski the entire time. Now, that would be a mind-bender.
You know, okay, can I pause on that? Because you mentioned just sort of offhandedly, Thomas Lekanis could rock a turtleneck like nobody else.
Uh-huh.
So the minute you did that, my brain went into, okay, who's the greatest player to ever wear a turtleneck? Or who are some of the players? Like, when I think...
Yashin.
You know, Yashin's got to be right up there on the top. Mario, Wayne. But you know who rocked it like no one else in the 70s with the long hair? It was Phil.
Yeah.
Was freaking fantastic. Like, Heatley's put it on. Yaroslav Halinka had it. Tim Young briefly for the North Stars. But I don't think anyone wore a turtleneck quite like Phil Esposito. I think he was tops.
Amit Kakar writes in, and this is a good one, an Oilers fan throwing and reeling back a jersey with a fishing pole over and over again until security comes. That would be an amazing hockey prank and one that we would like to see. Bex writes in a classic. It's got to be drafting a center from the Tokyo Katanas. Obviously,
Taro
a reference to one of our favorite.
We got today from people about the Taro Tsujimoto t-shirts that are available.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, man, those are sweet.
an absolute classic hockey prank. Moving over on the email side of things, as my computer, of course, is now failing me, because why would technology work at all today, Jeff Merrick? Just answer.
Hey, man, under the covers, bottle of scotch, good night.
It really is getting to be that situation, and I might dismantle this computer much as you have dismantled your box. I have the spinning beach ball right now on my computer. It makes me mental. A lot of people sending in having Jay Beagle as your first line center because Adam Oates is getting just lambasted. You see that Milbury thing yesterday where he claimed that Ovechkin hopped to the bench to avoid a minus?
What?
Yeah, that's what Milbury had footage of Ovechkin going off on a line change about 5 seconds before Nashville scored a goal. Hornquist had a breakaway and claimed that Ovechkin, because he, you know, obviously when you're a minus 33, you don't want to get to minus 34. So he claimed he was going off the bench to avoid a minus. It's pretty good, right?
Was he already on his way to the bench?
Of course he was. He had a minute 3 long shift after playing 2 minutes of power play time before that.
But in men's league, I'm kind of famous for calling guys off the ice on a line change when we have a 2-on-1, so I can get on for the plus.
Kareem Geisler writes in, Brad May separating all of his teammates' keys and dumping them into one box, and then he threw in his tees too. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I forgot about that one. That's a good one, too.
Michael Perino with another one. The greatest hockey prank was all the teams letting Toronto think they were any good until March. Talk about your April Fools. This is from Aaron Wood. I'm sorry, Aaron White, rather. This is the second time we've had Merrick live on the air destroying things. Money sure has changed him.
I'm Keith Moon all of a sudden. Oh, yeah, there was the microphone. Well, it didn't work either. I had to take it apart.
Right.
A microphone at the fan. I'm telling you, man, I am the enemy of technology. I should just be like full-on, like Unabomber Luddite, just go out and live in the country.
This is from Blanca. Good afternoon, gents. As a Hawks fan, my favorite prank that I've heard of is from the troll himself, Patrick Sharp. During team breakfast, Sharp stole Taves' phone and switched the number of a girl Taves had just broken up with Brent Seabrook's number. He then put it back, waited for Taves to get out of the bathroom, and then had Seabrook text Taves pretending to be his ex-girlfriend. I'm pregnant.
Oh, awesome.
It's yours. We need to talk.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
Sharp, who shared this story during an interview, described Taves as going ghostly pale and just kind of slid away from the table and back to the bathroom, presumably to have a panic attack, break a mirror, and then plan out the next 20 years of his unborn child's future in a Captain Serious fashion. That's the best prank ever. Love the podcast. We'll just call that one the top of the pyramid, because that's an amazing prank. I had not heard that one before. A couple of people have referenced that on Twitter, so I guess that is something that people know in Chicago Blackhawks circles, but that's fantastic.
Wow, that's good. I remember Mayday told me when he played with the Sabres, a game against the Hartford Whalers. Might have been Rob Ray who did it, but he was a rook, and they put a bunch of laxatives in one of his sandwiches, and it was so bad that he missed the game against Hartford Whalers.
Last thing for me, by the way, the best prank for me in sports, beyond hockey, as a New York Mets fan, somewhat, not so much today, but back in the day I was such a fan of the Hot Foot. Do you remember the Hot Foot, Merrick?
The Hot Foot? What, you
the
like
hot...
someone's shoelaces on fire?
Yeah, but it goes beyond that. It's amazing. So Roger McDowell, who used to be a relief pitcher for the Mets and is considered one of the preeminent jokesters in the history of baseball, used to have this thing he used to do, and I'm sure it was repeated in other locker rooms around the nation. He would take a book of matches, and he would stick a piece of gum on the book of matches. He'd fold it over so the matches were all sticking out. He would then have a player step on it with his heel, either that or crawl under the dugout bench to attach the book of matches with the gum to the player's shoe.
Whoa.
And then he underneath the dugout bench would light the book of matches on fire, and that was the Hot Foot. Isn't that amazing?
Like, that's really good.
As pranks go, sir, that it was one of my favorites. Hey, listen, well, in back
in the day of wooden sticks, I mean, when teams would go south on their coach, one of the things that they would do is you take a saw to the coach's stick and just put a tiny just saw into it a tiny little bit. So yeah. First time you take a slap shot, you're falling right on your face.
Oh, so it's like setting up a table during a wrestling match.
Precisely, Greg.
Precisely.
Spanish announced table of hockey sticks.
There you go. Finally, from a hockey thing, because I do want to talk about How I Met Your Mother last night, and I'm sure that's when Merrick's going to log off here. Steve Lepore writes in, NBC Sports Network averaged 375,000 viewers for the NHL during the first quarter of 2014, down from 2013, but up 18% from 2012. I imagine that's like a matchup thing. Like they haven't necessarily had the same matchups. Down from 2013 doesn't surprise me because if it is a matchup issue, that was the season in which we had conference versus conference intra-conference play. So the matchups were probably sexier for television for American audiences than they might have been this season. But 375,000 viewers from a TV perspective, Jeff Merrick, is good, bad, indifferent.
We're in Canada?
In the U.S.
It's okay. It's okay. I mean, that's more of a John Shannon question than it would be for me. But that's okay. But I'm with you on the matchup issue as well, though. Mm-hmm. And the one thing the NHL does very wisely, okay? This is where, I mean, I'm sure that other leagues do this as well, but I'm only aware of the NHL doing this. I mean, and this is brilliant. It's just smart business. What they do over the course of a television contract is they work with the broadcaster to help put the schedule together, to find one that's favorable for the broadcaster, okay? And what they do is they grow the matchups throughout the course of the deal. So if you start to look, and this is strategically what they do when they do their broadcast packages, is you start to get hotter games towards the end of the agreement with the broadcaster, so the numbers start trending up, 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 and then by the end of the contract, you want to have your numbers as high as possible when it comes to renewal time. That's the way they do it. So by the end, like the last year of any TV contract that you have nationally, the NHL loads that season up with marquee matches at big times. It's a brilliant strategy that the NHL uses, along with their schedule coordinator, Steve Hatzepetros.
There you go. As far as April Fool's pranks goes, my favorite outside of hockey was Lego today tweeted that they were, for one day only, offering delivery by turtle. they had a picture of a box of Legos strapped to the back of a turtle, and that is brilliant. And Cape Breton, who is that team, Merrick? What is their nickname? Do you remember? The Cape Breton CHL team. Yeah, the Screaming Eagles.
Screaming Eagles.
They had a tremendous prank on Facebook where they photoshopped a number 71 jersey banner into their rafters in honor of Ilya Kovalchuk, whom they once drafted in the CHL dispersal draft.
Oh,
he never played
draft.
A game for them. Yeah, in the air, right? Wow. In the not dispersal import draft. Yeah, 2000. They took him 10th overall in the 2000 CHL import draft. And the Facebook posting says, although he never played for the Screaming Eagles, his name stands out amongst hockey's greatest, and the Screaming Eagles organization is pleased to celebrate his career by retiring his number 71 jersey, the number he probably would have worn if he had played for the Screaming Eagles. So a fantastic prank on Facebook there as well.
I think didn't HC Davos today put out a press release about how they've signed Erik Karlsson's agreed to a transfer.
Yeah,
Erik Karlsson.
The HC Davos tweeted or put on their Facebook page rather that Erik Karlsson signed with them. But the great punchline to that story was the fact that they said he tore up the contract on the plane because he found out that they refused to give him number 65 because it's already on some other player's back. So that was the breaking point for Erik Karlsson, is that he couldn't be number 65 for HC Davos, and they also wouldn't give him the number, which is fantastic.
Awesome.
All right, I'm gonna do 5 minutes on How I Met Your Mother. Is this where you punt?
Yeah, probably. What am I going to add to this other than, this will just be my sort of audio version of bobbleheading.
Okay.
Just imagine me grunting and going, yeah, okay, whatever, wish.
All he knows is that Robin Shabotsky is a Vancouver Canucks fan, and of course, The show did leave its mark on hockey. It gave us one of the greatest jokes of all time, which is when she was proud to have attended a Vancouver Canucks game against the New York Rangers. She proclaimed to her friends that she met Mason Raymond after the game, to which Neil Patrick Harris then said, what is the opposite of name dropping, in reference to Mason Raymond?
That is a pretty good line, actually.
All right.
Okay.
All right,
get the hell out of here. Have a good end of the podcast, Wish.
We'll talk tomorrow.
Later, bro.
All right. If you don't want to listen to How I Met Your Mother spoilers, I'm going to give you 5 seconds to leave the podcast, shut off your iPad or an iPod, end the stream. For the rest of us who watched last night, the next 5 minutes or so, 4 minutes or so, are going to be at the show. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I liked it. I know I'm in the minority on that. I also will admit that I did not watch the last season of the show. I pretty much picked it up in the last two episodes, so I had less investment in the mother than most. And I understand that she had incredible chemistry with Ted. I understand she had incredible chemistry with the cast. She seemed like a real sweetheart in the two episodes I saw. So I get the idea that you're very upset about what happened there. And I also get the idea that you spent an entire season building up to a wedding that was then undone within like 15 minutes of the season finale. I get that too. However, as a Ted and Robin shipper, I am extraordinarily pleased to see that the show ended on that happy yet ambiguous note. I have three things I basically want to say about the finale, okay, which is that it wasn't all that funny, but then again, the show really hasn't been all that funny in about 2 years, maybe even more than that. I think a lot of us were watching it out of habit versus really watching it for the ingenuity of some of the previous episodes in the show's run. The things I want to say, first of all, I was very happy to see where they took Barney's character. Him as a single dad is perfect because I didn't want to see him in a marriage. I didn't want to see him in a long-term relationship. I wanted to see him playing the field. But at the same time, I wanted to see him having an education about his behavior and understanding priorities in life. And you know, as creepy as it was to have his first words to his newborn daughter be a pickup line they had previously used in the pub, I do understand the circle is complete aspect of now you understand what these words mean when you say them to a woman and finally getting that. So I thought that was a really nice note and a good way to kind of bring his character full circle. Where I found people really didn't get the episode was the idea that it was a choice of some sort between the mother and Robin. And I almost felt like that when he did go to Robin's place at the end of the episode after the mother has passed away and his kids have encouraged it, that it was almost like people were saying, why would he choose her instead of her? But the mother is dead, so there is no choice. They are soulmates, essentially. The idea that he and the mother belong together is without question cemented by this program. They are soulmates. They did belong together, but shit went awry. And if the show ever taught us anything, it's that you roll with the punches, that life is serving you constant bushels of lemons, and you can either make lemonade with it or you can get hit in the face with a lemon. This is really what the show has taught us over the course of whatever it's been, 8, 9 seasons. So the idea that he rebounds, he gets his shit together, his kids encourage him to go see Robin again, makes sense. And the thing I don't get about the show and the backlash against the way that the show ended up is the idea that, like, they ended up together. I thought the ending was ambiguous. They went, he went there, she's still there, he's single, she's presumably single with a lot of different dogs, and maybe they'll give it another shot. Because it's not predestined that they end up together, and I don't think the show really spelled that out. And to me, that was the right note to end on, because everyone saying that they don't belong together is essentially right. They've tried several times. For whatever reason, it didn't work. But maybe the show is saying it wasn't the right time for it. Maybe the show is saying now, at this point in life, these two people who do have chemistry, who do have certain aspects of their relationship that work, and he's the guy who finds the locket for her and all that other stuff. Like, maybe now it does work if it hadn't worked in the past. But we're not gonna tell you if it did or didn't. We're just gonna leave it a little bit ambiguous, and I appreciated that. Finally, the scene where the kids, who we've been seeing for years and years and years, including the kid from Wizards of Waverly Place, who's now like a lot older, are interacting with old Ted, was a joyous moment for me as a television viewer, because it showed that at the very least the producers had the idea of where this thing was going. and as someone who suffered through the X-Files screwing up their narrative, and as someone who sat through Battlestar Galactica screwing up their narrative, and Lost living up to its name and not having clue one where to take the story once the show took off, I appreciated the foresight. I appreciated the thought that went into trying to guide the show in some direction, even if it got real bumpy towards the end and didn't really bring us to that place in a very cohesive manner. So I at least offer kudos to the producers for trying to offer up a plan where other shows clearly just make it up as they go along. So there's my piece, Maddie. There's my How I Met Your Mother piece. I'm checking to see if you're actually still listening to the podcast or if you went off into the hallway for a beverage. Okay. Listen, when Merrick is on the phone and has to check out early, that allows me to go down this road. I've gone down the road. We're done with it. As the show sometimes says on Going Postal, pop culture. Or does it say that in the, it says in the intro, right? Pop culture. Well, there you go. There's the pop culture. And there it is. So, I've said my piece. Thank you to Renan Lalonde of TVA for joining us today to talk about the Habs. Thank you to Jeff Merrick for hanging on the phone as long as he did. And thank you to everyone now who is tweeting at me about How I Met Your Mother. And there it is. Peter Hassett agrees with me. Tally does not. Can I get on MVSW to tell Wyshynski he's an idiot, please? God. So I will spend the rest of my day defending my spot-on analysis about How I Met Your Mother finale. And then tomorrow we will come back and talk hockey. Plenty of games tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Please do tune in to watch some great puck. We will learn much about the Eastern Conference bubble and much about what the Columbus Blue Jackets are made of. Here is where we're going to learn everything we need to know about them. They have 3 games in 4 days. Colorado at home, at Philly, Chicago at home. That's brutal. Detroit has Boston at home, then Buffalo at home, then at Montreal. They're 3 in 4 days coming up over the weekend. But Colorado at home trying to prove they can win without Duchesne. And then at Philly, and then Chicago at home for Columbus. I said it before, man. They've shown me they know how to beat Detroit in a big game. And now it's time to show me they can beat Colorado, Philly, and the Blackhawks in a big game. Because the Caps ain't going away quite yet. And those hard-charging Devils are still waiting in the weeds. Oh, baby. Corey Schneider against the Sabres tonight. Here we go. Yager for Hart. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.